Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuka, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the fourth period. She covers the Anaheim Ducks, Hannah Spraker. Hannah, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Hannah. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well.
That's good. Obviously brought you on, Hannah, to talk about the Ducks. They are, off to an average start to the season, I would suggest. 4-4-1 in their first nine games, good for 9 points. But given the injuries that they've had to deal with to start the year, is this an okay start to the season for the Anaheim Ducks?
Oh, I think so, absolutely. I think that given how many key players are injured, and I mean injured for a while, I mean they're keeping their head above water, which is really all you can expect from them at this point. It goes to show also just how the Ducks always seem to have injuries to start the season, but I think they're in a good spot to maybe kick it into high gear if they can get the guys that they need to stand up and produce to do that, like Silverberg and, you know, Cogliano. I mean, Cogs is leading in points, but I think that this is really the best that you can expect from a team with this many injuries right now.
Hannah, the entire Anaheim Ducks family, there was a scary incident with Patrick Eves and his health condition. I know that he's back at home, but how is he doing? And I guess what is the long-term diagnosis for him at this point?
As far as I know, it's unknown. I know that they caught it early, and that is a huge positive. The earlier you catch it, I guess, the better the outlook. But yeah, scary stuff. I mean, whenever a player has something serious like this that isn't just an injury, I mean, you always have to consider the longevity of first and foremost their life. And, you know, this is a serious condition that he's facing. But the fact that they caught it early, from what I hear, the outlook is looking okay. But there are no further updates other than just putting his health first and foremost. And he's come out and said that he wants to get back on the ice as soon as possible. And he's one of those guys that if he can, he will. But it's just going to depend where he is in terms of this condition.
Like you said, Hannah, I think at this point we're all just happy that he's back home and happy with his family there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hannah, the one team you guys are going to be seeing a lot of are the Vegas Golden Knights. What do you think is going on with Vegas, and how do you think that they've managed to compile such an impressive home record already?
I don't think anyone really knows. I feel like the hockey gods are just trolling everyone right now. But Vegas, they have a surprising amount of depth. And, I mean, their scoring is great. I think that everyone expected them to be a little bit laughable. And then there was others that expected them, yeah, they'll be okay, but I don't think anyone expected them to have this great of a start to their season. I think that management did a great job compiling that roster, and there was a lot of thought and tactic going into that expansion that just put them in the best position possible to have a competitive team out the gate.
Hannah Spraker, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hannah covers the Anaheim Ducks for the fourth period. Hannah, the Ducks defense, we know the litany of injuries they've suffered. They suffer a couple more. Kevin Bieksa is going to be out of the lineup indefinitely. He broke his hand. They lose Cam Fowler for, I believe, 4 to 8 weeks with a knee injury. How is Randy Carlyle going to sustain yet more injuries on the Ducks blue line? And boy, doesn't the absence of Shea Theodore, who's now, of course, in Vegas, loom large with all these extra injuries on the back end?
Well, I mean, you've heard it said a million times, the Ducks have a plethora of young defensemen, which is great, which is what they need right now. But yeah, I mean, it's starting to look more like a San Diego Gold roster than anything else. But I mean, with Fowler especially, that's the one that's going to be really a bad blow to this this blue line. Bieksa, everyone was tweeting out that he broke his hand in that fight. He actually broke it falling when he tried to brace himself, picking himself back up. But I think Carlisle's just kind of going to do a little bit of musical chairs here to see what he can get going with what he has. I mean, what other options does he really have right now? Like, young guys like, you know, Jacob Medina are going to have to really stand up, and he has. He's been great so far. Montour, Manson, they just really need these younger players to step up into kind of a veteran role, because there's not much else on that blue line right now.
Hannah, I know it's only been a couple of games. How has Hampus Lindholm looked since coming back from surgery, and how close is Sami Vatanen to coming back from his surgery?
Hampus, I think he's looked great thus far. I know that they're going to ease him into kind of full throttle. They're not going to the last thing they need is for another injury. I mean, it's been a revolving door. One guy goes in, one guy goes out. But in terms of Sami, I think we can expect soon. I don't know a actual fixed timeline, but I imagine the sooner they can get him back and up to speed, the better the outlook for this team, and especially on the blue line.
Hannah, Ryan Getzlaff is back from injury. How has he looked since his return?
He's looked really good, I think. And on that top line with Raquel, I like Raquel on that wing. They had a lot of chemistry, Getzlaff and Raquel, last season, and it was working. I know Getzlaff and Eves had a lot of chemistry last season, but obviously that's not an option right now. They just need to get scoring, and I think Raquel and Getzlaff work great together. Getzlaff is that playmaker. I mean, I have been saying for so long I want him to shoot the puck more, because he's actually got a great shot, and I think that we can expect a lot of great goals out of Getzlaff. I think he's in a position where he can do it all. I mean, he's a playmaker. He's one of the best passers in the league, in my opinion. And I think he's really kind of thrown himself right back into the mix. And to me, it hasn't looked like he skipped a beat.
Hannah, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned the need for more goal scoring by the Ducks. Jakob Silverberg is one of those guys who hasn't yet got on the scoreboard. You know, coming off back-to-back 20-goal seasons, he's still looking for his first goal on the year. Why has he been struggling to start the year, and do you see signs that he's beginning to maybe break out and we'll get back to that 20-goal plateau that he's reached the last couple seasons?
I mean, it's a bit of a mystery. I mean, part of it could be, you know, Kessler's out and that. The lines are just shuffling like crazy, but yeah, I mean, it's he's one of those guys that should be scoring right now. He's one of those guys that should be, you know, standing tall and, you know, coming through for his teammates when there's so many injuries and it's just musical chairs of lines right now. I think that he will eventually break through. I don't know if he'll get up to that 20 goal mark, but it's to me, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be scoring. So it's a bit of a mystery, and it's one of those things where you're just kind of throw your hands up like, well, I don't know, he should be, but he's not. But I think part of it has definitely just the lines been shuffling and just trying to find chemistry where you can. But he's got to be shooting the puck more. He's got to be coming through for his teammates.
Yeah, Brandon, Hannah, one more question for you here about Brandon Montour. You mentioned players breaking out. He had a beautiful goal the other night. Is this the season that the rest of the NHL outside of Anaheim realizes just how good Montour is?
I hope so. I think he's definitely an underrated player. I think that there's a few guys on the Ducks that are underrated. I think Raquel is an underrated player, but I think that in terms of like media recognition, teams on the West Coast kind of can tend to fall off of the target. Just, I mean, you know, game times and whatnot. But I certainly hope that Montour starts to get the recognition he deserves. He's, for how young he is just a stellar player, and he's got great hockey IQ. He's one of those guys that I think we can expect a huge season out of coming into, I mean, this season and in the seasons following.
Hannah Spraker covers the Anaheim Ducks for the fourth period. Hannah, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
You too. When we come back, we talk about the shocking start for the Vegas Golden Knights and the horrendous start for the Arizona Coyotes. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Saturday morning on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. You can also check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. So, Dave, you're a big fan of Vegas as a city, as a travel destination.
Yep.
Where is the Stanley Cup parade going to start, and where is it going to end in June of 2018?
I suspect it would probably start at Circus Circus and end at, the Mirage, which is the hotel that's just in, or New York, in between Mirage and New York, which is the hotel that the arena is behind.
What about the Heart Bar?
Well, you and I would get out of the parade at that point, Ezzy, and we would obviously go to the Heart Bar, which is in Planet Hollywood.
Oh, there you go. So as long as you got the parade route all mapped out, because the Vegas Golden Knights just can't be stopped. Last night, a 7-0 victory over the Colorado Avalanche. It was a nice story to start the year, especially given the tragedy and the tragic events that happened in Vegas. But they're 8-1, guys. They've only given up 19 goals in 9 games. At what point in time, or have we already passed that point in time, have the Golden Knights gone from just being a nice story to potentially a Cinderella playoff team?
Yeah, they could be a Cinderella playoff team. You know, when they beat the Colorado Avalanche, you think, well, the Avalanche aren't a very good team, but the Avalanche have actually had a half-decent start to the season, right? So When you're talking about, you know, the story right now, it's pretty amazing, guys. And with everything that happened, you know, with the shooting in Vegas and how that city and state has responded to that, we saw, you know, the outpouring of emotion at the regular season home opener in Vegas. But, I mean, we know that this team has talent, but to me, what's the most impressive is not only does Vegas not have their first-string goaltender in net, they don't have their second-string goaltender in net. And Oscar Dansk, if you remember back, I believe it was 3 years ago, Oscar Dansk was one of the best goaltenders at the World Junior Tournament. So Oscar Dansk is actually someone that they acquired from the Columbus Blue Jackets in the free agent market in early July. Oscar Dansk wasn't even someone who they got in the expansion draft. We know that Calvin Pickard was claimed off waivers by Toronto, but then Malcolm Subban, who they acquired off of the waiver wire, went down. So right now they have Oscar Dansk and Max Lagacy, who has no NHL experience.
These were Dansk's first 3 games in the NHL. He's got a .959 save percentage.
Well, yeah, and he's a former second-round pick of the Columbus Blue Jackets, but nobody was expecting him to be a number one goaltender. He's obviously not a number one goaltender yet, but no one was expecting him to play significant games in the NHL this season. So it's really incredible when you consider the injuries they've had in goal. But, I mean, James Neal has had an incredible start to the season. Jonathan Marchessault has looked good. I mean, you can go up and down the roster, and the Vegas Golden Knights have been getting contributions from 3 different lines, right? So it's a great story right now. I mean, I'm not prepared right now to say that the Vegas Golden Knights are a Stanley Cup contender or anything like that. But if they keep winning, Drew, because you look at some of those other teams that we talked about right now that are struggling a little bit, Edmonton Oilers, Minnesota Wild, even the Chicago Blackhawks have struggled a little bit at times. They're picking up points and separating themselves from those teams. So I think at a certain point, I mean, the Golden Knights are going to lose again. But right now, I think it's just nice to watch the ride.
Well, I mean, they're banking points in a Pacific Division that, you know, hasn't been altogether great this year. I mean, the Pacific Division right now is being led by the Kings, the Golden Knights, and the Canucks. 3 teams that, you know, for the most part, maybe the Kings, some people had the Kings as a playoff team, but for the most part, those were 3 teams that people said were not going to be playoff teams this year.
Yeah, you expected Anaheim and Edmonton to compete for the division, and I still think that those 2 teams are going to compete for the division. The Ducks, we know they've had a lot of injuries. Even the Oilers have had some injuries when you're talking about Andre Sequeira and Leon Draisaitl, who's back in the lineup now. But, I mean, it is only, you know, 9 or 10 games into the season. But, I mean, at what point do you say, you know, well, you know, now we're a quarter point of the season, if you're 15 or 20 games into the season, at what point do you just start saying that, you know, this is a half-decent team? And I think we thought they would be competitive, Dave, because Gerard Gallant is an excellent coach. We know that. But, 8-1, I don't think, was expected by anybody.
And they've won 5 in a row, and their schedule is actually not too bad. They've got a few games off now. Then they've got the Islanders and Rangers, the Rangers team that's struggling. Then if you look at their November schedule, they've got a very, you know, easy schedule. Boston, Ottawa. I mean, they go on the road, so they have a 4-game road trip. We'll see how that works for them. But, no, Ezzy, I agree with you. I think it's a 6-game road trip starting in New York. But this is probably the opportunity. This is probably when we're going to see what this Vegas team has because, you know, they're 2-0 on the road. They got a longer road trip. We'll see if they can continue this momentum going. November 23rd isn't that far away, which is, of course, U.S. Thanksgiving when, you know, seems to be the barometer for teams making the playoffs and in the NHL at least. And it's an unexpected story. It's a nice story, I think. But I'm well along with everybody else. I never anticipated this Vegas team competing the way they are. But again, to what you just touched on, Ez, I didn't anticipate the Kings being this good either. So are these early season anomalies that will kind of come back and be corrected with the progression of a long, grinding NHL season? We'll find out, obviously, but definitely unexpected.
You know, in Vegas, though, one of their big free agent signings this offseason was Vadim Shipachov coming over from the KHL. Obviously, that hasn't worked out well. They signed him to a 2-year contract. He's been sent back to the AHL, and his agent has been given permission to try and find a trade partner for that. Do you expect that to happen? Why hasn't that worked out well, Dave?
First of all, how unusual is that situation? I mean, how many times can you remember where an agent is given permission to seek out a trade with another team? I mean, it seems like nobody seems to be talking about that, but to me that is just a shocking notion that the team basically said, go ahead, find a trade partner, make a trade. When does that happen? I can't think of another situation that it's become publicly, like on the record. I think his agent is Peter Svoboda, I believe. And I think, I'm almost incredulous when I heard that. Like I thought, okay, well, that's not real. Then you hear that it's actually true. Seems like a bit of a mismanagement because you anticipated that he'd be part of it. But I mean, what are you going to do? You can't really argue with the team. They're 8-1. They clearly know what they're doing. I mean, sure, it's an asset. I mean, I suspect George McPhee thought he'd be dealing a few more from a few different positions and perhaps using him. But again, like I said, I'm just incredulous at the way the situation's unfolded.
And you know what's really amazing to me about this Golden Knights team is that when you consider the forwards that are leading the team in scoring right now, James Neal and David Perron, both of these guys are pending UFAs after the year.
Sure.
And with the exception of Riley Smith, Cody Eakin, and Eric Halla, the Vegas Golden Knights don't have any other players that are under contract for more than 1 year after this year, right? So, I mean, this Golden Knights team was not built really to succeed this year.
Their assets at the trade deadline.
Right, and they stockpiled draft picks, and they stockpiled defensemen. The reason why Vadim Shipachov and Shea Theodore are in the minors right now is because they have too many defensemen on one-way contracts. That's the only reason why they're not in the lineup.
Because you're saying that if they could move, and they put Jason Garrison on waivers yesterday.
Right.
So they're trying to get him through. So you're saying that's why you think Shipachov isn't in the lineup, just because there's too many defensemen?
They have too many players
right
on one-way contracts. I mean, Vadim Shipachov was one of the first players they signed, as you mentioned, Drew, and you would expect him to be in the lineup. But as Dave just mentioned, I mean, they're 8-1 right now.
Sure.
So you could make the argument that they don't even really need Vadim Shipachov, right?
There's nobody who's going to trade for him, right? Given that he's still got another year on his contract after this one, nobody's going to trade. And it's not like at $1 million, it's at $4 million a season. Nobody's going to trade for a guy that you have no idea if he can actually play at the NHL level.
Well, I mean, Shipachov has only played a few games, but he's a guy that had really good numbers in the Continental Hockey League.
Right.
So I think there would be interest in him. I don't know necessarily if you're going to have 15 teams knocking on the door, but when you look at this Golden Knights team going back to, you know, their 8-1 start, it's truly impressive because they don't have stars on their team. And the one star that you could point to on their team was Marc-Andre Fleury, and he's out of the lineup right now, right? Mm-hmm. So James Neal, yeah, sure, he's a former 30-goal guy with the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Nashville Predators, perennial 20-goal guy. So you knew that he was going to score some goals, but it's really that you've had a team of cast-off players, and that's no offense to any of them, but these are not, you know, high-end players. These were players that other teams thought were expendable, really, And they've come together, and they're winning a lot of hockey games. So it's incredible to me, and especially on defense. I mean, that group of defensemen, let's be honest, is not very good. Shea Theodore would probably be their top defenseman when you're talking about guys like Nate Schmidt and Lucas Ibiza and John Merrill. I mean, these are, you know, third-pairing guys, second-pairing guys, right? So it's really impressive what they've done.
On the flip side of things is the Arizona Coyotes, who are now winless in their first 10 games of the year, 0-9-1. They've become the first team in the post-Original Six era to lose their first 10 games of the season. Give me some reason for hope, reason for optimism for the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, let's be honest, their season, they don't have a chance to make the playoffs at this point. Their season's over.
Yeah, it's over. They're not making the playoffs. I think most of us thought that they weren't going to be a playoff team, but I also don't think that they wouldn't have a win by this point, right? So, I mean, it's pretty incredible when you consider that in this day and age of parity in the NHL, that the Arizona Coyotes don't have a win. So, I mean, if you want some reason for optimism, it's because of all of the good young players they have in the system, right? A lot of them are already playing for the Coyotes. But
Clayton Keller's having a very impressive rookie season.
I mean, Clayton Keller's the obvious guy who's having a great rookie year, and we knew that he was going to be good, but it's just not a very good team. It's too young, in my opinion. You know, we thought that the defense, you know, would definitely benefit from having a guy like Nicholas Jalmerson, but I mean, the puck is in their zone too much of the time. Antti Raanta has not given them, I think, a comparable goaltending to Mike Smith. So if you're looking for reasons for optimism, I don't think there are very many.
Yeah, and I would suggest that, you know, like as you just touched on, that, you know, you had Antti Raanta who didn't play particularly well in the games he played and hasn't played since October 12th. Looks like he could come back into the lineup soon enough. But so you've got Louis Domingue as your guy. I think he's played six of the games for the Coyotes. Look, this is a team I don't think any of us had them doing anything particularly much this season, aside from competing because they have good young talent. But I mean, I don't think that any of us anticipated them to be a playoff team. So I don't know that there was much hope other than watching their young players continue to develop.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, this is, but to be 0-9-1, to Edzie's point, in this era of parity in the NHL is quite a negative accomplishment. And they play the Devils tonight, and they're looking to become the, if they lose to the Devils tonight, they will tie the 1943-44 New York Rangers record of 11 consecutive losses to open a year. I mean, it's always a hard sell in Arizona in the best of times. It's going to be an impossible sell for the rest of the season, for the Coyotes. Good tickets will be readily available. Meanwhile, just down the road in Vegas, it's a dream start for Bill Foley. It's a dream start for George McPhee. It's a dream start for Gerard Gallant and the rest of the Vegas Golden Knights franchise. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Chicago Blackhawks. Scott Powers of TheAthletic.com in Chicago joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number three is up next on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text. Send your messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Scott Powers. Scott covers the Chicago Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com in Chicago. Scott, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Scott. Brought you on, obviously, to talk about the Blackhawks, the team you cover very deeply for The Athletic. And here we are, you know, Scott, the Blackhawks are 5-4-2 on the season, which I suppose is a average start to the year, sort of maybe the definition of average. But goal scoring, an area that most wouldn't have expected to be a problem for the Chicago Blackhawks, has been to start the season. Only 20 goals in their last 9 games, and only half of those goals have come in 5-on-5 play. From your assessment, why are the Blackhawks struggling to put the puck in the net?
Yeah, part of it's just getting the puck near the net. A lot of the shots are coming from the outside, and this is unexpected considering. I think you see on paper this team, and then especially scoring 10 goals in the first game, and they obviously weren't going to keep that up. But you saw a top nine. You add Sharp and you bring in Saad to play with Taves, and you add in, you know, Alex DeBrincat, who, you know, OHL, CHL player of the year, and a huge offensive upside. And, you know, the thought was that Nick Schmaltz is going to take a step forward, and obviously that came and down the line, and you didn't think that, you know, offense was going to be an issue, but it has been. They just, yeah, they've been struggling in power plays, scored once, I think, the last 16 opportunities, and, you know, two of their last three goals have been come shorthanded, so it's some kind of strange streak there, considering how they started the year and just what you thought this team could be. So, you know, Joel Quenneville started to mix up the lines a little bit, and, you know, early on yesterday, they had their best period since the opener, you know, against Pittsburgh, and, you know, the shot opportunities, a lot of those things were clicking a little bit more, but, yeah, the quality chances just aren't there, you know, just not getting, you know, not getting to the net and, you know, getting those net front opportunities, and just a lot of stuff on the perimeter.
Scott, you mentioned Brandon Saad earlier. How would you say he's fit back into the lineup?
Yeah, early on, you know, it's hard to tell with the teams. They came out flying so great, you know, those first two games against Pittsburgh and Columbus, that they, you know, they scored 15 goals those first two games, and Saad had a hat trick, and he looked like his, you know, he looked like he fit in perfectly, and you know, as of late, it hasn't been clicking as much, so it's hard to, yeah, I don't know. It, some of the chances are still there. Even yesterday, you know, he had a breakaway shorthanded, and there have been some opportunities, but it just, you know, up and down this lineup, it hasn't clicked, and you know, I guess they're going to, I'm sure they'll still continue kind of fiddling with the lines, but I think Saad and Taves, they think, fits there, and they're trying to figure out who that right winger is. But yeah, it's kind of been mixed results, where you definitely see some positive that Saad brings. He gets to that for the most part. You know, I think he's a little bit more matured, and you can see how he's developed going to Columbus. But again, a lot of these guys are going to be evaluated based on their scoring, and right now they're not getting a lot of it done.
Well, talking about scoring, earlier in the week you wrote about Nick Schmaltz and his need to shoot more instead of passing. How has he adjusted his game at all since you kind of took notice of the fact that he's been doing a lot of passing and not as much shooting?
Yeah, a little bit. He certainly needs to be a little bit more aggressive. You know, yesterday I thought he was probably the best player on the ice for the Blackhawks. You know, he set up his shorthanded opportunity for Nisimov. He had a breakaway opportunity, and Nisimov finished with a rebound, but I think that's still a work in progress, where, you know, his entire career he's been a pass first guy, and, you know, in North Dakota, set up a lot of goals for them, and, you know, won a national championship, and then turning pro, it's been an adjustment where, even though he played winger last year and now he's played center, and I think playing with Patrick Kane, you often defer. So I think that's kind of a work in progress, but, you know, it's in his head, and certainly being told to him. So I think over time you'll see him be more aggressive. But, yeah, I think he's still kind of coming in his own this season, where you can see that he's definitely taking a step forward. And, you know, his speed is just it's a game changer. And it's opening up different opportunities for Kane. And, you know, I think for them it's just kind of figuring out how to, you know, get that last step, where a lot of the plays are getting set up pretty nicely, and then just kind of lacking that finish too. So, I think it's a work in progress for Schmaltz, but he's got a lot of tools, and I think at some point you'll see him start, you know, scoring and start producing pretty consistently.
Scott Powers is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott covers the Chicago Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com. Scott, when the Nicklas Chalmerson trade went down in the offseason, we know that head coach Joel Quenneville wasn't happy with the trade. It wouldn't have been a move that he would have made. Connor Murphy came over from the Coyotes in that trade. How has Connor Murphy looked on the Blackhawks' back end? He's still looking for his first point on the year. And, you know, since that trade, has, you know, Joel Quenneville and the front office, maybe have they settled maybe their differences, whatever differences existed, or is that still maybe a lingering issue between the two different bodies?
Yeah, no, I think it'll always be lingering. I'm not sure that Sam Bowman and Joel Quenneville are going to go on vacation anytime soon, but, you know, trying to work these things out, and obviously I think for both of them this is a key year coming off of, you know, back-to-back first-round exits. So, you know, I think it's in their, you know, they need to succeed to continue on. So, but Murphy's been okay. You know, he's kind of played more of a third-pairing role, so you didn't anticipate that. When you looked at him on paper coming in, you thought it was probably Duncan Keith and Seabrook, and then Connor Murphy being probably, you know, top four defenseman and playing some major minutes. And, you know, he's been, I think he's had a couple better games lately, but he's not going to provide much offense, and not that Nicholas Jarmoson did either, but he's also not going to be relied on as much defensively as Jarmoson did too. So, you know, I think the Blackhawks know what they had bringing him in. You know, he plays a physical game. I think he's had to adjust his game a little bit where the Blackhawks value possession, and, you know, it's not just getting the puck out of the defensive zone. And I think a lot of times in Arizona, I think that was probably the priority, was just to get it out, and now it's valuing the puck and, you know, trying to create some offensive opportunities from the defensive side, and, you know, getting that puck off the ice. So I think some of it's been learning for him, kind of an adjustment. I'm curious to see how this unfolds going forward. Right now, he has been playing more of a third pairing, and part of that too is the Blackhawks have really liked Jan Ruta, who they brought in from the Czech Republic, a free agent, and you know, Ruta's bumped up, and he was actually playing with Duncan Keith last night. So you know, he's had second right hand in his shot next to Seabrook, so he's kind of exceeded expectations and taken some of the opportunity that you kind of anticipated Connor Murphy would have had.
You know, Scott, you just mentioned Jan Ruta has actually looked pretty good, surprised a lot of people. But when you look at this group of defensemen as a whole, as it's constructed, is this group good enough, and is there enough offensive contributions coming from the defensemen this year?
No, as of right now, no. I think you know, you look at the power play defensively, you know, Seabrook and Keith haven't done much there. And then 5-on-5, there's not being much created. I mean, I think Gustav Forsling has almost some upside there. And, you know, Keith and Seabrook have produced in the past at some level. This year the offense really hasn't come much from the defensive side, and, you know, there's not much being created there. I think the one thing the Blackhawks can kind of fall back on, and at some point this year that Dan Bowen might take advantage, is they do have some cap space with Marian Hossa's LTIR, that if it's not looking right, that at some point he's got to go out there and acquire someone that improves them. And right now, I think a defenseman, the top four defenseman, would make this team better. Maybe someone with a little bit of an offensive upside. So I think that's something, you know, it's a little bit early to talk in trades, but I think that's something in the back pocket that Stan Bowman's going to look at some point this season, where if it just isn't clicking, and right now this looks like a pretty average team. But I think at some point he'll look at what this team needs and probably go out and get it.
Scott, one thing we here in Winnipeg always associate John Toews with is winning and everything. And you wrote recently about how he had lost his confidence after a few disappointing seasons. So Stella got her groove back, and how did Jonathan Toews get his confidence back?
I'm sorry, I lost you there.
Oh, okay. I was just asking, like, you wrote about Jonathan Toews and how he'd lost his confidence. So how did he get it back after a couple of disappointing seasons?
Yeah, I think a couple of factors went into that. I think this offseason he approached it a little bit differently. And, you know, I think he tried to add some speed to his game. And, you know, he felt like he was playing maybe a little bit too heavy, and he needed to add some quickness. And I think Brandon Saad coming to this team is benefited him too. And, you know, since Saad left, they really didn't have a consistent left winger. And I think that really impacted him too. You know, there was a stretch last year where Schmaltz and Panic had played with Toews, and they looked pretty good. And Toews looked like his old self a little bit. But for the most part, the last two seasons, he hasn't produced, and he hasn't, you know, he hasn't really been that player that he's been thought of in the past. So I think that's helped. And even now, you know, as much as Toews said that his confidence is back, that, you know, a lot of his production this season has come early on, just like a lot of the Blackhawks. So I think it's still a work in progress for him too. And Saad, that they, kind of recreating that chemistry. And, you know, again, Toews and the guy they need to produce more. And right now this team isn't scoring enough. So up and down the lines, you can talk about Toews. You know, outside of everyone, probably except for Kane. Kane's probably been their most consistent goal scorer. But they need all these guys to be better and start producing more.
Scott Powers is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Chicago Blackhawks. Scott, we'll let you go on this last question. We're so used to seeing Scott Darling as the Blackhawks' backup goaltender behind Corey Crawford. We all know now that he's in Carolina getting his first opportunity. Anton Forsberg has only played a couple games for the Blackhawks, but how has the fit been for him as the Blackhawks' new backup goaltender behind Corey Crawford?
Yeah, so far it's been really good. You know, he's been in the net twice, and he'll get another chance today with the back-to-back. But both games he had, you know, 30-plus saves. Both came in the, I think both were overtime losses, so he'd certainly like a win at this point. But both times he was really solid, and I think it's been a little bit of a learning curve for him, too, where, you know, guy playing in the AHL mostly and getting a lot of starts and now having to be that number two and getting the rare start. But so far, you know, with that time off, he's done well. And, you know, both games was really one of the reasons why the Blackhawks were able to get a point. So, you know, the sample size is so small with two games. But the Blackhawks like what they've seen. And, he's a bigger goalie and, you know, has some skill. And they thought just needed an opportunity to be an NHL goalie and get some opportunities. And so far, so good. So we'll see how that plays out with just how, you know, getting so rare starts, how that, you know, how he continues to be consistent. But, yeah, so far so good in the Blackhawks, like what they've seen from him.
The Jets don't see the Blackhawks until the middle of December, but we'll be keeping a close eye on our Central Division rival. Until then, Scott Powers with TheAthletic.com. Scott, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us to discuss the Blackhawks. Take care, Scott. Thanks again. When we come back, things have gone from bad to worse in Montreal. It's pretty much chaos with the Canadiens. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Busy day here on TSN 1290. The Jets, or pardon me, the Bombers and the Lions play at 3 o'clock. So Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day will start at 1. You can join the boys bombing Walby Westwood. They have your pregame, halftime, and postgame wraparound coverage. That starts at 1 o'clock here on TSN 1290. And, of course, later on tonight, you have the Moose and the Belleville Senators with our own Dave Manuk on color, joining Mitch Peacock in studio. We'll talk about the Moose in the final segment of this morning's program. So a very busy day here on TSN 1290. Just keep your radio tuned to this fine station. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to watch tomorrow night's Jets Penguins game or any Jets game, remember Bernstein's Deli, hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's, all the games on their big screen TVs. Things have gone from bad to worse in Montreal. They won a game earlier in the week. That's good. Winning a game is good. But on Thursday night against the Los Angeles Kings, they were shut out 4-0 by the Kings. Carey Price is getting the Bronx cheer when he made a save in the third period.
I'm not cool with that, by the way.
By the Habs fans. No, it's pretty hot garbage.
You're talking about the best goalie, and I realize, I mean, we've all been to Montreal. I spent a little bit of time in Montreal, and I've been to that arena several times. I wasn't in the Montreal Forum, obviously, when Patrick Waugh got the famous Bronx cheer and then never played a game again for the Canadiens, but I know that those fans are passionate, but you're talking about the best goalie in the world.
Yeah. I
don't think he deserved that.
No, I don't think he deserved that. I mean, they scored zero goals. So I don't know what you want from Carey Price.
Apparently they want him to score.
They want, well, there you go. That's not an unreasonable. Make all the saves and then score all the goals at the same time. You know, if you're Carey Price right now, I think you have to be regretting signing that long-term contract there.
And again, and I do think that the Montreal Canadiens have great hockey fans, but I'm just saying, I mean, you don't want to kick a guy when he's down.
I also don't think, it's not like, if you have to pinpoint the problems in the Montreal Canadiens, Carey Price is towards the bottom of that list in my mind. Sure, he might not be playing that well, or he might not be playing up to his Vezina Trophy winning level, but the team has scored 18 goals in 10 games.
I mean, they're dead last in the NHL in goals for.
They're dead last in the NHL in goals for. They scored 5 goals on Tuesday night against the Florida Panthers. So take away those 5 goals.
Yep.
And let's say they get, you know, because you don't get score 5 goals a game. Let's say they scored 3 goals in that game. You're talking about a team that's scoring barely a goal and a half a game. I mean,
no, and the players have talked about it. Everyone to a man has said that they've all have to improve. I mean, they're not the playing. It's you can't pin this on Carey Price. This has been a collective, team letdown.
It's been absolutely incredible what's happening in Montreal. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. As that was bad of the Habs fans, and I understand the frustration, and I get, being upset with your team and upset with the performance, and it's sort of hard to. I mean, I guess you can boo the entire team off the ice at the end of a bad period or at the end of a bad game. But for Carey Price, I mean, what do you want from Carey Price? I mean, I don't know what they expect from Carey Price. Is he supposed to make, I mean, even if he makes every save in that game, you're still 0-0.
Well, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, Carey Price has not looked good on some goals, but it's obviously not all his fault. And the thing with this Montreal Canadiens team is we knew that they were going to struggle offensively at times, and we knew that their weakness was up the middle. Right? And, they've had Jonathan Drouin playing center, and you've got Philip Deneau there and Thomas Plekanec. Alex Galchenyuk, as you know, Drew, has been playing on the wing. So we knew that they were going to be weak up the middle, and they're not a hard team to play against. But when you're talking about that defense, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, in my opinion, even though Victor Mete's got all the talent and upside in the world, I mean, you can't be playing him on your top pair with Shea Weber, and I just don't think they have a lot of alternatives. Carl Alzner, who they brought in from Washington, signed him as a free agent. He was their big free agent signing. Mm-hmm. He struggled on that second pair. Jeff Petrie has struggled. I mean, Jordy Benn has struggled on that third pair. So you look at this defense, to me, it's not quick enough. They have trouble getting the puck out of their own zone. They're not getting a lot of offense. And then Carey Price isn't able to kind of erase all of the warts that they have on this team, right? So, yeah, you're right. I mean, you could look up and down the roster and you could find players that need to be better, right? But to me, Carey Price being booed by the hometown crowd is just, it was almost the low point of the season.
So far, certainly. Jonathan Quick, the LA Kings goaltender, came to Price's defense after the game saying it was completely undeserved. So good on Jonathan Quick, the goaltending fraternity, of course, a close-knit one. But for an opposing team's goalie to come out and defend Carey Price in that instance really does tell you how rotten things have gotten in Montreal.
And I just don't understand how Marc Bergevin hasn't made a move yet. Because the season is quickly slipping away.
Yep.
If this keeps up, you're going to put yourself in a situation where you really can't get yourself out of it, right? They've got, what, 2 wins on the season?
2 wins in 10 games. They have 5 points in 10 games.
So, I mean, you might already be out of it.
Yeah, you very well might be already out of it. You're absolutely right, Ez. And then that's just the on-ice problems. Then, when things go bad, they just snowball. Dan Milstein is an NHL player agent who represents a lot of Russian-born players.
Panarin,
Pavel Datsyuk, of course, former of the Red Wings, Nikita Zaitsev of the Leafs, and Nikita Nestorov used to play for the Lightning. And
it's a couple of Nikitas right there, Drew.
It's a couple of Nikitas. He comes out this week and says, and this part is just the most bizarre part of the whole thing, quote, Alex Galchenyuk isn't a problem, but the coach is. He has never successfully coached a Russian player. He took over midseason. The Habs over midseason, they have the most Russian club in the NHL. All but one Russian player is gone. Now, twofold. One, I guess, he's not wrong per se in that they've certainly de-Russified their team since last year.
I don't think that's a word.
Well, but everybody knew what I was saying. I mean, you knew what I meant.
No, I did.
Okay. Alexei Yemelin, he went to the Vegas Golden Knights, used to play for the Habs. Mikhail Sergachev went via trade to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Alex Radulov and Andrei Markov all leave in free agency.
I don't think that there's a relation there. I mean,
you think it's just a weird coincidence?
Yeah.
It's not like the Habs didn't try and re-sign Radulov. They tried to re-sign Radulov badly.
And the Montreal Canadiens have a long history of having Russian players as well.
Also, Alex Galchenyuk isn't Russian. He's American.
He's
from
Milwaukee, isn't he?
He's Russian American, though.
Yeah, but he's from Milwaukee.
Yeah, his parents are from Russia.
Well, so do you think that Claude Julien is picking on Alex Galchenyuk?
No. I mean, I think that's ridiculous what Dan Milstein is saying, and I'm sure he's trying to stir things up a little bit for his client there. But when you're talking about Andrei Markov,
Galchenyuk's not his client.
Oh well, speaking of Russian players,
yes.
But when you're talking about the Montreal Canadiens. First of all, if you go player by player there, all the players that you mentioned that are Russian that aren't on the team anymore, Andrei Markov, the Habs wanted to sign him to a 1-year deal. He wanted a two-year deal.
Right.
That's why he didn't sign.
Correct.
Alex Radulov signed with Dallas because they gave him more money. And Mikhail Sergachev was traded to get Jonathan Drouin. So I don't think that – I think each one of those Russian players didn't come back to Montreal for a different reason.
And Alexei Emelin, who Vegas acquired in the expansion draft, the Habs tried to trade – get him back in a trade, and he ended up in Nashville.
Right.
So, I mean, Milstein's comments are just bizarre out of left field, but they're just adding to the off-ice controversies surrounding the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, obviously, it seems like Milstein has a serious problem with Claude Julien, probably going back to their, you know, when Julien was in Boston. This isn't strictly a Montreal thing, but it's another bizarre tale in a season of bizarre tales in Montreal.
It's just unfortunate how the Montreal Canadiens have started, because Carey Price signed that big contract. You know, they brought in Jonathan Drouin as a French-Canadian. They really thought that he was going to have a lot of success, especially if they gave him that first-line role, first-line minutes. Carl Alzner, you know, just hasn't been very good on defense, quite frankly, but it goes back to what I was saying. I mean, there are problems up and down this roster. They're not good enough up the middle. They're not good enough on defense. Mm-hmm. They're not getting scoring from a variety of players that they were expecting scoring from. And, you know, they haven't been able to turn it around so far. And as we said, I mean, you're looking at this season so far and you're saying, okay, well, you're 10 games into the season. You can still maybe turn this around. But we've been saying this for 2 or 3 weeks now, right? We're 3.5 weeks into the season, mm-hmm. and the Montreal Canadiens only have 2 wins and they're not scoring any goals. And Carey Price, you know, can't seem to, you know, shut out teams to save their lives. So it's a situation where the Canadiens are having problems everywhere. And, you know, it's you just feel for that city and that team. And it looks like, you know, this might be a year where, you know, things are going to, you know, take a turn for the worst. And, you know, you might have to pull out that ugly word rebuild.
Well, it certainly might be. You're not too far away from that. The third event in a dramatic week for the Montreal Canadiens comes courtesy former head coach Mario Tremblay, who goes on Montreal radio last Monday evening and matter-of-factly, and this is just, you know, states, you know, as if he's an expert on the subject, that it's common knowledge, this is his quote, that Alex Galchenyuk has been to detox on 2 separate occasions. I mean, first of all, that's not common knowledge, and nobody, in fact, knows that for sure or at all. So for Mario Tremblay to come out and say so is so tremendously irresponsible. It's somewhat mind-boggling.
Well, and as you know, if a player does enter the NHLPA's substance abuse program,
completely confidential.
It's confidential, so they can't release the name of the player. So
the team itself, I don't even think, is allowed to know.
No,
like Mark Bergevin had a press conference this week, and he said, look, if he goes into that program, I'm not even informed about it.
I think Anson Carter's words ring true when he says that there's certain environments players don't want to play in simply because of the scrutiny that they receive. And I mean, you see that as, like, why are we discussing that? I mean, it seems like an infringement on a player's privacy. I just don't see how that impacts, you know, like how it's important to the discussion. You can talk about his on-ice play. You can say it's not, but it just seems like it's salacious and gossipy to be talking about something of that nature on a broadcast.
And so casually and so cavalier. I mean, if he does have an addiction issue, and I have no idea if he does or doesn't, but to just drop it as if he's, you know, playing with a hangnail it's
irresponsible.
It's irresponsible.
Well, he's making a bad situation worse, because Alex Galchenyuk, I mean, let's be honest, guys, he's a top three pick, and he has all the talent in the world. He's having a bad start to the season. He had a bad finish to the year last year.
After he got injured.
So, but we know that he has all the talent in the world, but when you start bringing out, you know, some of his off-ice problems, especially in a market like Montreal, I mean, you're just going to make it more difficult for the player. So, again, I agree with you. I have no idea if he has off-ice problems, if he's had addiction issues, but they have to get him going or maybe, you know, move him.
I think Anson Carter, who was on with us in you know, at the 10 o'clock hour, is right. I mean, at this point in time, I don't know how you can resuscitate Alex Galchenyuk.
You can't have him playing on the fourth line, I'll tell you that much. He's got to play a top six role. With all of the speed and skill that he has, he can't be buried in the bottom six or bottom three.
I think you have. I know. I mean, the problem, of course, with trading him at this point in time is you're trading him a diminished asset. But even, you know, in terms of the player itself, it's just unfair to him to put to keep trotting him out in these terrible situations where he's playing in a, you know, a fourth line role and he's got all this scrutiny on him. This is just a ugly, ugly start to the year in Montreal.
I still think you could get a first round pick and a player for Galchenyuk.
Well, he's a former 30 goal scorer in the NHL. It's a guy who, in the right situation, not even in the right situation, but right now in a non Montreal situation where you don't try and turn him into something that he isn't. Maybe he is just a very good left winger in the NHL. Well, those don't grow on trees if you can get a guy who can put up 30 goals a game. 30 goals a year, rather.
30 goals a game would be impressive.
30 goals a game would be really impressive. Arthur Staple of Newsday covers the New York Islanders. He's up next on the show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Joining us from Nashville, where the Islanders and the Predators will do battle today, is Arthur Staple of Newsday. He covers the New York Islanders. Arthur, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Always glad to be here, guys.
Arthur, obviously, brought you on to talk about the Islanders. You know, a decent start to the year for the Isles. 5-4-1 through the first 10 games. You know, currently in a wild card spot, although it's far too early to really look at the playoff standings as more than anything than a passing curiosity. How would you assess the start to the season for the Isles so far?
You know, I think it's been it's a pretty appropriate record, I guess you could say. They've had some good moments, most of them at home. You know, John Tavares sitting there with 10 points in 10 games, all in three home games. And Anders Lee is off to a good start. Brock Nelson's got some goals. Jordan Eberle still sitting on no goals, but has played pretty well. And really, some of their underlying numbers, especially 5-on-5, are pretty solid. They're playing well at even strength. But as everyone may have seen the other night in Minnesota, the power play is not just not producing. It's actively hurting them by giving up 5 shorthanded goals already this year. So there are clearly some areas that need to be better when you're close to 500. But I think overall there's some good signs.
Arthur, in your opinion, why have the special teams been so bad? Because you just mentioned Islanders have given up 5 shorthanded goals, and the power play has also been an area of weakness so far this year.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. It's been a problem for them for a few years, and you always look at the high-end guys on each team and you say, well, a team with John Tavares on it shouldn't have a bad power play. They just, you know, when Doug Weight was an assistant under Jack Capuano, the power play was his area, and it had good moments but a lot more mediocre and soft moments. And now that Doug is the head coach, he's brought in a couple guys in Kelly Bookberger and Scott Gomez, who he kind of designated that power play responsibility to. And really, from the first game of the year, it's just not looked. It's just been real passive, and I think kind of they hit a low point against Minnesota the other night. Not just the passivity getting into the zone and making lax plays, I believe is the way that Doug put it, but getting outworked by an aggressive penalty kill, and really aggressiveness is the hallmark of all special teams now, where you have to do the things that you do and do them fast and do them decisively, and the Islanders really haven't done that, and it's really been hurting them, and it didn't hurt them more than it did the other night in a 2-goal loss.
Arthur, one of the players not with the Islanders on this road trip is Josh Ho-Sang, who was assigned back to the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. He scored, I believe, yesterday for the Sound Tigers. How has he taken the demotion, and what was the rationale behind the move back to the AHL?
You know, I think he's taken it okay. You know, you take the coach at his word, and Doug is nothing if not a master communicator, and I think he's been very honest and direct with Josh since the first day of training camp of what they wanted to see from him. And really, you know, coming into this season, not really assured of a spot, but certainly looking like a top-nine spot was available for him, as well as another young guy, Matthew Barzal, and and really, you know, I think the way that Barzal has kind of seized his role and used the creativity and his offensive skills to also be become a better aggressive player in his own end, it kind of stands a little bit in contrast to what Hosang has done. And certainly, the you know, he put up some good numbers playing well with Brock Nelson, but a lot of you know, a bit of floating, a bit of overstaying shifts, and really just not shooting the puck. I think in his six games, he had seven shots on goal. So he's, you know, Josh Hosang is has been called, I guess, mercurial was kind of one of the adjectives to describe him during his amateur days, and that's something he's got to get out of his game now. He certainly got it out for longer stretches when he came up for his 21-game stint last season, and I think they wanted to see a little bit more of that and hadn't seen it, so they wanted him to go play. And, you know, he goes down and has a two-on-one with Michael Dalcol and decisively shoots the puck and scores a goal last night in Bridgeport, and I think they just want to see some more of that and in a couple weeks reevaluate where they are.
Arthur Staple is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Arthur covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper. Arthur, you know, Dennis Seidenberg going to get back in the lineup tonight. He hasn't played a lot this year. Sort of Scott Mayfield has taken a lot of that Dennis Seidenberg playing time. How has Mayfield looked through, you know, eight games that he's played this season so far for the Isles? And are you surprised that Seidenberg can't really get into the lineup on a regular basis?
You know, Mayfield's been pretty good. He and Thomas Hickey were really their best defensive pair for the first four or five games of the season once Mayfield got in after missing opening night. And missing opening night was probably a plus for him since it was such a mess against Columbus. But that pair is, as a third pair is really, you know, showed some good possession, some good ability to get out of their own end. And Mayfield scored the first goal by an Islanders defenseman at the end of their win over Arizona the other night. So it's a bit of a surprise to see them both out, but I think Doug was saying he felt like their play dipped a little bit the last couple games, and really a bad turnover by Hickey early in the game in Minnesota didn't help much the other night. And really, as far as Seidenberg goes, you know, he was a late addition last season after a pretty strong World Cup, and I think he surprised a little bit with how productive he was, how durable he was last year. He was a good partner on his offside with Calvin DeHaan. So they signed him back as more of a stopgap. But really, you know, this year it looked very early on in training camp like they were going to keep eight defensemen with Mayfield and Adam Pellick and Ryan Pulock all needing waivers this year. So I think Doug Waite's plan from the very start was to have eight here. And Seidenberg's 36. You know, he's been around a lot. He's got a lot of miles on him. But, you know, and he certainly struggled in that opening night game against Columbus, and he wasn't alone in struggling. And really, I think for a guy who's played regularly over the last few years, it's probably a little bit of an adjustment to be in and out of the lineup. And I think tonight is a big one for him. They've obviously got, like I said, guys in Hickey and Mayfield who have been productive and played well this year. So I think the onus is on guys like Seidenberg and guys like Pulock, who really haven't had much of a chance either to play well when they're in there and maintain that spot. And you would think that sort of competition, which the Islanders haven't had for a long time on defense, would benefit them as a group.
Arthur, how has our old friend Andrew Ladd looked through the first 10 games of the season?
You know, he's been okay. He had a pretty good start, which for him is big news around here, since the one goal in 20-plus games to start his Islanders career last year definitely weighed on him and weighed on the team and certainly weighed on the fan base. So he's got a couple goals. Last few games, I think, has been not quite as good, and certainly he's a part of the power play on the second unit that just hasn't produced anything. So you'd expect to see lower numbers from guys like him getting the extra power play time. But I think in general he's been driving possession pretty well. He was on the line with Matthew Barzal to start the season, and they weren't scoring a ton, but certainly were creating a lot. Now, you know, I think Ladd is back with Jason Chimera on his opposite side. I think they're going to have Casey Cizikas between them as a, you know, a little bit more of a sandpaper-ish third line against the Nashville team. I just get the sense that playing all these Western Conference teams as the Islanders have early in the season, they want to be able to use their, you know, their limited size to maximum effect. So, but I think Ladd's been good, and he seems a lot more comfortable than he did easing in last year. Obviously, you come into a new scenario, a new team with that big a contract. They put an A on his sweater, and not producing definitely seemed to weigh on him a bit, and that weight seems to have been lifted, a little bit more comfort this year.
Arthur, Islanders co-owner Jonathan Ledecky revealed the proposed site for the new arena in Belmont Park. How significant is that? Do you think that I believe they have till January to get out of their lease with in Brooklyn. So do you anticipate them doing that, and do you think this will be full go-ahead with the new arena?
Well, if I knew that was the case, I certainly wouldn't be hanging out on a street corner in Nashville talking to you guys. I had that kind of insight. You know, it certainly seems from the Islanders' standpoint, everybody that I talk to from ownership on down feels very confident about the proposal that they submitted to New York State for that, to develop the site near Belmont Park. And, you know, it does have a lot of positives. Has a suburban railroad stop there, which the Coliseum never had. It's kind of right over the border into Long Island from New York City. There's decent access from highways around there. There's obviously lots of parking since that's where they're going to build. So I think they feel good about their proposal. It's just really a matter of what the timeline is going to be from the New York State side about making a decision and clearing the way for construction to begin. Because sometimes these projects, you know, anybody who lives in any sort of urban area, you know, there's community involvement. There's some other hurdles that you have to get over to really start putting shovels in the ground. But I think that's certainly their whole focus. They're obviously going to need a place to play, even if they were chosen, if their proposal was chosen tomorrow and they got to start building an arena, they obviously need a couple of years before they can open that thing. So they've committed to playing in Barclays Center next season. And I think beyond that, if it's a year, if it's 2 years before their arena's open, I think they'd love it to just be 1 year in 2019-20 where they got to figure out a place to play. That could be a little bit of a free-for-all where they might, you know, find places in arenas in the tri-state area to play some home games if Barclays doesn't welcome them. So, but I think really their total focus is trying to get this new arena at Belmont and be the first time in franchise history that the Islanders owners would own any part of an arena that they played in. So, I think they see this as an important you know, milestone to reach in this franchise's history and give them some credibility not just in the tri-state area but in the league as well.
Arthur, you reported earlier that Manitoba's Ryan Pollock is going to go into the lineup for Thomas Hickey. How do you think Ryan Pollock has developed in his first 2 years in the NHL?
You know, it's been some fits and starts for Pollock. You know, this year, just knowing, I think, that he needed waivers, and they weren't going to risk trying to pass him through waivers. They were hoping, I think, the coaching staff to see him, you know, fight with these other young guys to grab that sixth spot on D. And, you know, he's got the big slap shot that he uses to great effect and scored a lot of goals in the AHL in the last 3 years. But I think the coaching staff was really left wanting more from him in the preseason and in training camp. And you know, Adam Pellett got the nod out of those three young guys opening night. Mayfield came in and made an impact. And Pollock's played a couple games, but really as a seventh defenseman and power play specialist, tonight will really be the first night he's part of a six-man rotation. And he's got to show something. I think, like I said with Seidenberg, when you've got eight defensemen here, it doesn't matter where you were drafted, how old you are, you know, they got to put the six best guys out there. And, you know, with two guys, like I said, who have produced this so far this season, and Hickey and Mayfield waiting in the wings, it's really incumbent. Dennis Seidenberg, to me, is more of a flexible guy, whether he can go in and out. But Ryan Pollock is still a guy still young at 23, who still has a lot to show at the NHL level, and I think they're still waiting to see him show it, so tonight will be a big opportunity for him.
Arthur, last question for you. We always appreciate your time, and we'll let you get onto one of the, you know, I guess you got to behave until post-game in Nashville, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll stay on the straight and narrow until we get out of the building.
There you go. Professionalism first and foremost. I have to ask you about John Tavares. We know that this season is contract year and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I expect that the answer is there's no developments at all. But, you know, how is the team handling it? Is it just a function of, yeah, we know it exists and we're not going to worry about it?
Yeah, I think you talk to any of the guys in the room, you know, especially the guys that are tight with Tavares, and they all say, you know, you're not going to influence him. He's his own man. He's made his decision, which is to wait and see what happens with the arena situation, what happens with the, you know, the front office situation with the Islanders, what happens on the ice, which I think he feels a lot of responsibility for getting this team back to the playoffs and becoming more of a consistent contender. So I think the focus for him is to see what happens with the future of this franchise. And, you know, it's as far as the arena situation goes, whatever we hear from the Islanders is probably, you know, trickles down to us. And on its way down, it certainly gets passed over to Pat Brisson and to John Tavares. The owners have been incredibly keen on keeping those lines of communication open. And I think if we were to ever hear about John Tavares having made a decision that he doesn't want to stay, then obviously Garth Snow would have to explore a trade. But the time to really do that was last summer. And we didn't hear it. And I think that to the Islanders feels like if they can get this arena situation sorted out and they know where the future of the franchise lies, that they'll get some good news from John Tavares and a quick negotiation, and he'll be locked up for the next 8 years. I don't think it's ever been about money. I had reported a couple months ago that they barely talked any contract terms, because I don't think there is much to talk about. Islanders have made it clear that this guy is their priority, and once he just says he's seen enough to start talking money, I think it's going to be a very quick and profitable negotiation for John Tavares, whether it's 11.5 a year, whether it's 12 per year, whether we go even higher than that. I think it's a name his price sort of situation. So I think everybody's still waiting. And Tavares did go 5 games without a point, which definitely seemed to weigh on him. And that lets some of the chatter creep in about whether he really wants to be here or not. And then he turns around and puts up 7 points in 2 games, including a hat trick to beat Arizona the other night. So I think no one can really question his focus and his work ethic, and no one really ever has around here. And, I think still waiting and seeing on that. Like I said, once you see some certainty on the arena situation, whether it's a month from now or 2 or 4 months from now, I think you'll see some more certainty on John Tavares' situation.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper. Arthur, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Arthur. Thanks again. When we come back, we look at the Manitoba Moose with the Manitoba Moose Week in Review. One final segment to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, he was a writer on The Daily Show. Alingon Mitra is going to be in town. Easy for me to say. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. Remember, big concert series event coming up next weekend. Jamie Kennedy. You know Jamie Kennedy, particularly from the Scream movies, the Wes Craven Scream franchise. Jamie Kennedy going to be in town next weekend at Rumors. And, of course, if you're looking for a place to host your holiday party, New Year's Eve plans, whatever it might be, it's not too early to start thinking about that. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, RumorsComedyClub.com. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Dave Minuke going to be doing color on tonight's Moose Belleville Senators broadcast with Mitch Peacock. Last night, the Moose in action, dropping a 4-3 shootout defeat at the hands of the Bulls. Dave, an interesting game last night and a good week for the Moose, really. If you look back to last Saturday when they were playing at Iowa, since then they've gone Two wins, one shootout loss in the 3 games this week for the Moose, and have an opportunity to bounce back tonight against the Belleville Senators.
Yeah, it's just their 4th home game of the season. They haven't played a lot at home, and they're going on the road. I believe they have a 6-game California road trip coming up for Manitoba, so they're looking to give the home crowd, surprisingly very good home crowd, considering that they were up against the Jets game night last night, but they had a very good crowd last night. There had to be at least 5,000-6,000 people in the building, so it was a good atmosphere. The game was a very good game itself. I mean, I have to say, if you were used to seeing Moose games last season to this season, it's like a completely different team. And of course, there are a number of different players this year, which is part of the reason for that. But it's a much better Moose team. They had a lead. They gave it up. Belleville was kind of buzzing. They took advantage of their opportunities. The Moose, but it was one of those games where when the Moose gave up the lead and then Belleville, you know, they gave it up and it was tie, and then Belleville took the lead, you really didn't feel like the game was out of hand. You felt that the Moose could come back in that one. And sure enough, they did. Chase DeLeo scored his first goal of the season. Really nice work. Got the assist went to Mason Appleton, who had 3 assists in the game. He's really developed as a nice piece for the Jets, or, well, it could be for the Jets.
Jets organization.
Right? Jets organization.
Yeah.
He's an interesting player to watch. He's been very good his last four games, has a four-game point streak right now. So he's a nice player. Michael Spacek had a bit of an unusual injury. He was taken out, so Coach Vincent didn't have an update after the game as to what is going on with him. He's another young player that you're going to want to watch. And Jansen Harkins, who is just a very, very smart player, will be another young guy that fans get the opportunity to watch here in Winnipeg because, again, a lot of this is, you know, with the draft and develop team is they talk about these young prospects that are in the organization. Well, you have an opportunity to see these guys. So, you know, saw Eric Comrie last night and obviously Jack Roslovic, Nick Patan, Chase DeLeo. I mean, it's a good young Moose team, but they have the structure. They have some veteran players in there as well. And one player I have to, of course, mention is Sami Niku. I mean, he is just I said it last night on Twitter. Like, he's a joy to watch. He really is. He's just very smart with the puck. His skating is superb, and his puck sense is really good. So, I mean, the time and space situation for him. I mean, Mitch was telling me that the Finnish ice is a little, slightly different than traditional European ice. It's more of almost a hybrid between European ice and NHL ice. So, you know, he's obviously going to have to adjust, and he is adjusting to the North American game, but he is a player to watch for sure.
Well, you know, one guy that you didn't really mention there in the great recap of what's been happening with the Moose there is a guy that Ezzie's a big fan of. Ezzie, of course, pioneering the hashtag Free Buddy Robinson. But Buddy Robinson with two goals last night, he was sort of he was signed by the Jets on July 1st. You know, he's a guy who's bounced around. Most of his career has been in the AHL. He's had some games in the NHL. Not a guy you would have really thought much of in terms of a signing. He's been a great fit for the Moose so far this year. He's got 9 points in 8 games, 5 goals on the year for Buddy Robinson.
No, and he was excellent last night. And his line with Mike Scarbosa and Mason Appleton has really clicked. They showed a lot of good chemistry. So he's a big body. He's surprisingly fast for someone of his size. Like, it's a little
about
bit
6'6", if I'm not
mistaken. Yeah, and it's deceiving. Like, I didn't anticipate him to have the speed he does have. I mean, again, I'm not saying he's Nikolai Ehlers on the ice, but he's surprisingly fast. He's got a good puck sense. He's in front of the net. No, he's a smart player. He's a good player for the Moose. Really nice, addition for them. And he's been on a hot streak. He's really been, you know, again, like I said, with that line, he seems to have, you know, put something together here for Manitoba.
And Dave, I think we knew that Buddy Robinson and Michael Scarbosa were going to have an immediate impact on the Moose just because they have years of American Hockey League and NHL experience. The guy that you mentioned earlier, Mason Appleton, playing on that line, and I think that's probably been the biggest surprise early on this season for the Moose because we thought he might play another year at Michigan State, right? And then he had a good training camp, and he's already got 7 points in 8 games playing on that line, really the second line for the Manitoba Moose, right? So for a sixth-round pick back in 2015, you know, I think the Winnipeg Jets, Craig Heisinger, are really happy with how much success Appleton has had early on.
Yeah, and I mean, Ezra, you're 100% right. If you remember, I think he was named captain earlier this year of Michigan State. So we all anticipated him going back to Michigan State for the year and playing there. But, of course, you know, that changed. And again, he's an interesting player because he's a bigger player than I anticipated. He's a smart player. And his passing is good. His skating is good. I mean, obviously, he's a young prospect, and there's things to develop. And, you know, I already, of course, with a little bit of success in the AHL, immediately I've got people texting me saying, you know, should he be a call-up? And I'm like, no. Like, you got to let these prospects develop. That's the whole point of drafting them, is allowing them to develop and you know, removing the warts that they may have to their game. So to me, a player like that is a player that you allow to marinate in the AHL and really develop properly.
And Dave, also, when you consider that when Adam Lowry and Matthew Perreault come back into the lineup, mm-hmm. you know, they're possibly going to get Brendan Lemieux and Tucker Poolman back for the Moose, so it's only going to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. The Moose, at least competitive this year after 2 down years for the Manitoba Moose. That's it for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Manitoba Moose and Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, and of course you can subscribe to the show each and every week. For producer Rory, for Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.